The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, Commander Chris Hadfield has found navigating Limerick a little bit more difficult than navigating space. He has joined us in the studio. Thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure, and glad to find you here.
Now, what has you in Limerick?
I'm speaking at a conference this evening. It's folks that, with the long aviation tradition of Shannon, in fact, it was one of the shuttle alternate landing runways. When we launched out of Florida, if we'd had certain types of engine problems, then in fact, we would have pushed the nose over and landed here in Shannon. But I'm speaking to folks that are very much involved in the aviation business.
I didn't know that. That was an option for you.
And then also I spoke at a fundraiser for Ghana Medical Help last night as well. So it's
and that's because you have a niece here studying in Limerick.
Yeah, she's studying to be a doctor and MD at Limerick University. Yeah, so nice chance to visit. But I'm here to talk to you.
Well, we were just chatting during the ad break, and you're doing an enormous amount of television work at the moment. This seems to be your main thing now, is it?
Well, I think the things that I've done are still pretty rare in the human experience. And the real question is, once you have had an experience like commanding a spaceship or seeing the world thousands and thousands of times, what do you do with that experience? Do you just keep it to yourself, or do you try and find a way to let other people get it and therefore maybe roll it into their own decision making? And so that's why I've written three books and very active using social media. I speak all around the world. I teach at university. I work with schools. I play music. I have a YouTube series called Rare Earth. But also, I just finished a series with BBC on BBC Two called Astronauts, Do You Have What It Takes? That did very well. And I'm filming a 10-part series with National Geographic right now about planet Earth called One Strange Rock. And it'll come out in March.
Well, I was just saying to you again off air that I was reading as well that NASA spends as much money on investigating Earth as it does in space. You explained it to me very nicely because I was expressing surprise. Hang on. Well, I thought all your work was about what's outside of Earth.
Earth is in space, and very much so. And that's when you do a spacewalk, when you're outside of a spaceship, floating weightless, you really suddenly have that slap you in the face, that right there next to you is this big rock. We're used to looking up and seeing the moon as a big rock, or maybe in the distance, Mars, or if you're careful, Venus. But Earth is just another one of those, and it's the one that's most important to us. And so one of the main mandates of NASA and the other space agencies of the world is to use the high ground of space to better understand our own planet, to look at, what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong.
Yeah, because I imagine many people regard it, the perception is that you're out exploring space, you're trying to find out what else is out there, but you actually spend as much time in applying that to what is going on Earth?
Well, the space station has three main types of experiments. Some look out towards space. We have the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer and X-ray telescope looking at the universe. We use the space station itself as a laboratory with weightlessness, so you can study fluid physics and the human body and flame and things like that. But the third piece of that, of course, is looking down, looking back at the world. If you go around the world every 92 minutes, you can start to understand things in a way that's impossible just standing on the surface. So we take advantage of all three of those directions, running the 200-odd experiments that are on the spaceship. And of course, if you just think about it, with GPS and communications and the way we talk to each other and weather forecasting, those are all directly coming to us from satellites that are orbiting the world. And most of that research and development came through the space agencies. So we're really capitalizing on the ability to put rockets and people and hardware up there.
And how much information has been gathered now at a greater pace? The reason I ask this is I was reading a book recently which showed that at the turn of the century, the Americans decided to put all of their nuclear war capacity together on a single computer server. And it was the biggest investment of its kind at the time, at the end of the last century. All the computing power on that server is now contained in a PlayStation 4. So what does this, what capabilities are there now for finding out things?
Yeah, to just take that back a little, the lunar lander, when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon, the lunar lander had 8K of memory. 8K, you know, that's
you
a
wouldn't
tiny,
buy a phone with 8K of memory. Now,
that
you?
Is not even one. That's one email, and the space shuttle really had it operated on about 128K. So, the integration of artificial intelligence into what we're doing is staggering. Maybe the best example right now is a company called Planet Labs, which is a private company, partially set up by a fellow out of Cambridge, guy named Will Marshall. But they can now map the entire world, image the entire world every single day. And it generates about a million JPEGs of the world, a million images of the world, about, I think it's 7 terabytes of data a day. And that's all bringing down. So every single place on Earth, down to about 3 meters, and it's a private company, can be imaged every single day. So,
and what benefit does that bring?
Oh, gosh. You can understand every change that is going on the surface. If you want to know, I don't know, where are the caribou today? Or where are the ptarmigan nesting? Or every ship that's above 50 north? Or where is the ice? Or where are the icebergs? Or where are all the ships on Earth? Or where are all the trains on Earth? Or you can... All of that information is readily available now, just as a purchasable data source. If you're a real estate agent, or if you're interested in how is the rice crop in the world doing this year, or how much of the world is covered by trees, all of that data is like going to the doctor and getting a physical all of a sudden for the entire planet every single day.
And is humankind able to process that information?
Our inventions are. Yeah, that's the whole purpose of machine intelligence, is it can take a vast amount of data and turn it into something that's interesting to us, rather than just be overwhelmed by the noise of it, to be able to ask it for specific subsets of information. Then it becomes really useful.
That may help us in the interpretation, but does it mean that we actually have the ability or the will to do anything about the things that we discover?
Well, if you don't know what the information is, then it's very difficult to make an informed decision. And it's easy to just go by sort of belief or something.
That happens a lot. That's human nature a lot of the time, isn't it?
Yeah, and a lot of bad decisions are made that way. Just because it's human nature doesn't mean it's, say, a good way to run a business or a good way to run a country or a good way to set up policy. Most good business and country and policy decisions are based on facts and data and actual information. So having that information as a resource, I think, is really useful.
And yet there seems to be something of a sort of a backlash against science, a backlash against anyone who's regarded as an authority. I mean, that's very prevalent in the United States for America. I know you're Canadian, but, you know, that seems to be one of the things that brought Donald Trump to power a year ago almost.
No, I think what brought Donald Trump to power was the fact that the middle class felt betrayed because they'd been promised a great level of prosperity, but the average standard of living around the world has been rising significantly for the last 40 years, but the United States wasn't the average. And so as the average rises around the world, in fact, that means the United States loses ground. And so there was a great feeling of betrayal, and he just rode that wave to power. And you can listen to all of the noise that the media is constantly generating, and they can't understand that the fact that he uses social media is not, in fact, policy. And the more that they rebroadcast it, the less they are actually reporting on what's happening in the world. It's just gossip. And it's self-defeating, because simultaneously with that and what you just said, NASA and NOAA, which is the ocean and atmospheric arm, just published the definitive document after the last 4 years of research on the state of the world's climate. Based on the thousands of sensors and the satellites and all of the information and the best leading and understanding and scientists from around the world. And so that's the same U.S. government. That's the same organization. And that information is readily available to anybody that wants to
and
read.
And published without political interference. Because
correct.
There were the suggestions that there was going to have to be sort of political oversight before scientific information could be disseminated.
Yeah, well, that's not true. So, I mean, you can go online and read it yourself. The Precy, I put it out on social media immediately. And I said, everybody, before you have your next discussion about our climate, you should read this. This is the actual status of it right now in the last 100 years of data and how that piggybacks on the last million years of data. And that's worth reading.
It may seem ridiculous me asking you this, but there are people who believe that man is not responsible for climate change. What does that data tell us?
Well, just because there are people that believe things doesn't influence the data, nor am I too concerned about it. There are lots of informed people of the world, and those tend to be the folks that are very much involved in making policy and trying to understand what we ought to be doing. And so I think it's a really worthwhile document to read. One of the main conclusions out of the executive summary at the start is there is no other credible explanation of what has happened over the last 120 years apart from what the 7.5 billion of us are doing, which is not illogical. It's pretty obvious, really. If you just plot human population over time, our success in feeding each other is just skyrocketed over the last, few decades, and keeping ourselves alive. And that doesn't come without a cost. But it's not the end of the world either. And so you need the information in order to then make informed decisions, in order to the world has never been perfect, and neither have we, but that doesn't mean you just focused on the lowest common denominator. I think you need to rise above that and not get mired in the noise and pay attention to what's actually happening and try and make good decisions as a person, as your group of friends, and then hopefully collectively as a species.
Commander Chris Hadfield, it's been great having you on The Last Word here on Today FM again, and thank you very much for making the effort to battle through the traffic here in Limerick today to get to the Spin Southwest studios. We very much appreciate you doing so.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.